From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Iraq has joined a growing chorus of international voices calling on Saudi Arabia to stop its war against Yemen. Iraq's Prime Minister, Haider al-Abadi, sharply criticized Saudi Arabia's military intervention in Yemen on Wednesday, saying there was no logic to the bombing campaign. Abadi's criticism added yet another layer of complexity to the Obama administration's support for the Saudi bombing campaign in Yemen. Saudi officials have insisted that their airstrikes, which they named Operation Decisive Storm, have been effective in weakening the Ansarullah rebel forces that control the Yemeni capital and much of the country. The Saudis claim the rebels are being supported by Iran. But the Iraqi prime minister dismissed the claim that the rebels were Iranian proxies and said that the fighting in Yemen had created a huge humanitarian problem. Abadi also said that the problem of Yemen is within Yemen. He warned that Saudi airstrikes might be a precursor to a more assertive Saudi military role in the region. Although Tuesday saw a UN Security Council resolution passed 14-0 with a Russian abstention imposing an arms embargo on the rebel forces, there were clear signs of dissent among the council's members over the Saudi role in the fighting in Yemen. This was Russia's permanent representative to the UN, Vitaly Churkin, after the vote was taken.
Thank you, Madam President. The resolution makes reference to the need to resume the negotiations between Yemeni sides and expresses support to UN efforts here. However, the co-sponsors refused to include the requirements insisted upon by Russia addressed to all sides to the conflict to swiftly halt fire and to begin the peace talks. There is no due reflection in the resolution of the difficult consequences for civilians in Yemen due to fighting, nor is there a clear enough expression of these in statement of obligations as well as regular humanitarian pauses. There is inappropriate reference, given the situation in Yemen, to the sanctions aspect in the resolution. We insisted that the arms embargo needs to be comprehensive. It's well known that Yemen is awash in weapons. In this regard, we think it necessary to stress that the adopted resolution should not be used for further escalation of the armed conflict, which could have most difficult consequences for Yemen itself as well as the whole region. Without a doubt, the current chaos in Yemen is exclusively playing into the hands of terrorist organizations. There is no alternative to a political solution to the conflict in Yemen. We expect dynamic activities from the UN for a resumption of peace talks between all parties to the Yemeni conflict. There is going to need to be a swift start to this work based on already existing documents. Thank you very much, Madam President.
The Ansarullah movement and its popular committees slammed the UN Security Council arms embargo imposed on them and their allies. They called on the people of Yemen to join a demonstration Thursday condemning the Security Council resolution. Political commentator Radwan Risk spoke with Press TV's Bardi Ahonadar about the Yemeni response to the Security Council resolution.
Well, this is not a surprise at all because we are used to this kind of behavior from the United Nations. As we know that we are seeing something similar in their behavior towards Israel, and this is something that's continuing. This is the continuation of its policies. We all know that United Nations was not fair. It's only representing the superpower in the world, and which is, United States, and influenced by the United States and the Western countries. As we have experienced this kind of behavior for many, many years, for decades, since the existence in 1947 or 1949 of the new United Nations, we are used to this kind of irrational behavior, irrational decisions. They gave Israel over the decades, at the upper hand and the green light to massacre the Palestinian people. Now we are seeing something exactly the same, as we know that Saudi Arabia now it's attacking a poor neighbor country like Yemen, attacking civilians, which is, should be considered a world, this is a war crime in the eye or in the interpretation of the international law. And this is something that is giving the just also the green light to the Saudi Arabia to continue on destruction of this pure country, destroying the infrastructure, attacking civilian targets, killing hundreds and thousands of civilians, people, most of them are children, women, elderly, and this is that now we will see a new involvement, a new phase of this attack, this brutality of the Al-Saud's family and the Saudi Arabia as a kingdom, as a country. We might see a new phase in the coming days, that we are going to see more civilians to be killed and more destructions to be done to the country. And this is something ridiculous coming from the United Nations, because United Nations supposed to be fair, supposed to be used as a judge between conflicts, between countries who are going into such wars or this kind of situation. We know that we are not expecting justifications to come from the United Nations. It's been used, it's a tool in the hands of the superpowers against the poor country, and this is something that the United Nations should be questioned. And now we are going to see that the Yemen is going to pay the price under the brutality of what's so called of the Saudi coalition, and this has no reason at all. Nothing can allow Saudi Arabia just to go into Yemen or to attack Yemen as is attacking now. On top of that, just listing the Ansarullah or the Houthis, blacklisting the Houthis is also that, giving more and more reasons or justifications, yes, or allowing the Saudi Arabia to continue on. And this is something that we might see that the Saudis could continue on in their brutality more and more. And we might see an invasion of Yemen. And then we are going to see in the 21st century that a power like Saudi Arabia or a country like Saudi Arabia just invading a very poor country like Yemen, stripping the Yemen from their independence, from their dignity, from destroying their infrastructure, killing their civilians.
Right.
And this is something that should be considered a war crime.
Syria also joined in the condemnation of the Saudi attacks on Yemen. Telesur's Nashwan Abdullah filed this report from Damascus.
On Monday, the Syrian national parties, including the government and opposition blocs, protested in front of the Saudi embassy in the Syrian capital of Damascus in solidarity with the Yemeni people against the continuous Saudi-led coalition attack on Yemen.
We are gathered here today to confirm that any aggression against any part of the Arab nations is an aggression against us. Our history and suffering are united. We know that the Arab Zionist Alliance aims to separate the region for the interest of Israel.
The Saudi Arabian coalition has carried out roughly 1,200 airstrikes since the beginning of the attack on Yemen, destroying 120 governmental institutions, killing 2,500 and injuring 3,000. Nevertheless, many politicians in Syria believe they will not be successful.
لأن السعودية دخلت إلى المستنقع اليمني الذي تعلم جيدا بأنها لن تخرج منه لأن موقف الشعوب الحرة مثل الشعب السوري والشعب اليمني.
Saudi Arabia has ended a quagmire of which they will not be victorious, because the free nations such as the Yemeni and Syrian people will not allow the Saudi-American evil alliance to affect the Arab nation or any free nations in this world.
أو تقسيم لأي جزء من الخارطة السياسية القائمة الآن على في الوطن العربي وخاصة في سوريا وخاصة في اليمن.
The United Nations has warned of the increasing humanitarian disaster due to the ongoing airstrikes and the continuing siege, knowing that most of the affected are civilians. Nishwan Abdullah, Telesur, Damascus, Syria.
Meanwhile, Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister, Hassan Amir Abdullahian, said that the Israeli spy agency Mossad and other regional intelligence services have been organizing the transport of terrorist groups into Yemen. Press TV's Hassan Tavakoli has the details.
Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian has told Press TV that the Israeli spying agency and certain regional intelligence services have been attempting to move terrorists to Yemen.
The intelligence at hand all indicated that over the past 2 months, certain intelligence services inside and outside the region, of course with the links they had with the Zionist regime, were seeking to move ISIL forces from Syria, Iraq and some other parts of the region to southern Yemen, to move Boko Haram forces from Nigeria and al-Shabaab forces from Somalia. And this happened. Backed by people and the army, the Ansarullah movement stormed the assembly of ISIL forces and al-Qaeda-linked militants and achieved a great victory.
Amir Abdullahian recalled that al-Qaeda-linked militants have never targeted Israel's interests anywhere in the world, and even ISIL avoided confronting Israel during Tel Aviv's recent onslaught against Palestinians in Gaza. He described the Saudi military intervention in Yemen as a strategic mistake that would jeopardize security both in the Arab Kingdom and in the whole region. He criticized Saudi Arabia and the United States for their double standards towards terrorism, noting Ansarullah's achievements in tackling al-Qaeda in Yemen. He warned Saudi leaders against falling for a conspiracy to push the kingdom into war, crisis and ultimate disintegration. The Iranian official rejected the presence of any Iranian troops or military advisers in Yemen. He also called for a return to national dialogue and the formation of a broad-based unity government in Yemen.
A call for action against torture in Mexico, where civil society organizations are demanding effective measures to curb the widespread practice of police and military torture of detainees. A scathing report was issued by the UN last month, which concluded that torture was systemic and generalized, with impunity in such cases being practically universal. Mexican authorities rejected the report's conclusions on the scope of the problem. However, this week, Mexico's federal attorney general and interior minister announced new protocols dealing with torture would be developed in consultation with civil society. Telesur's Clayton Kahn reports from Mexico City.
For 32 years, Ramon has worked as a journalist covering Mexico's crime, corruption, and violence. In 2012, he was arrested and jailed for 6 months for what he says was a story on political corruption of Mexico City's elites. He says he was physically and psychologically tortured in prison so as to keep quiet.
The kidnappings, the torture, what it does is destroys a person. It destroys one's confidence as a human being.
A United Nations report released in March and conducted in the spring of 2014 deemed that the practice of torture in Mexico is systemic and general, pointing to a pattern of arbitrary arrests and use of excessive violence.
There is constant mistreatment when people are arrested, and when I say torture, it's generalized. I mean that according to the information I have received, this applies to practically all the agencies that make arrests in this country.
The UN Special Envoy also pointed out that the number of documented complaints of torture has increased dramatically since Mexico launched its so-called war on drugs in 2006. However, Mexican authorities have rejected the UN's findings.
The position was made clear by the Foreign Secretary. There are certainly important differences. We do not all agree with the UN's conclusions.
Although Mexico has signed international laws on combating and prohibiting the use of torture, rights groups argue that the practice has been general before 2006 with no prosecutions made.
Impunity is 100%. Nobody is prosecuted or sentenced for the crime of torture. Generally, they are police or military servicemen who are acquitted, or the accusation of torture is always minimized.
However, this week, Mexico's Attorney General and Interior Secretary are reviewing new protocols to combat the crime, ordering their agencies to work with civil society groups to develop policies. Clayton Cantelasur, Mexico City.
Here in the U.S., people took to the streets and cities across the country Tuesday to protest against police violence. RT's Alexei Yaroshevsky was at one such protest here in New York, and he filed this report.
We actually managed to speak exclusively to one of the organizers of this protest, Dr. Cornel West.
There's got to be accountability in America for police shooting down folk. But it's a love march. That's what it is.
Are you happy with the turnout today?
Magnificent. Brother Carl was just telling me. Tell him, Brother Carl.
We're over 1,000 people here in New York. There was a question of whether this movement had died. It's been answered. This movement is alive. There are people here who are saying that police getting away with murder must stop. And it's not just saying it today. We're going to go on and on.
Do you think it's going to be larger next time?
Oh, we know it's going to be larger next time, brother. Because we got people in this nation who care about other people.
So now as protesters took to Broadway and are marching down the street, it has grown and definitely the biggest march we've seen since December last year. Not quite in the numbers of the Million Man March in New York City we saw in November last year, but those who organized this particular one assuring us this is the first of many and they will not stop until they get some results, until they see at least steps in the direction of indicting the police officers who have been killing unarmed civilians in the streets of America for the last 2 decades. Alexei Roshevsky, RT, reporting from New York City.
As we reported Tuesday, the Reverend Edward Pinckney was back in court in his continuing challenge to the powers that be in Benton Harbor, Michigan, known to locals as the company town of the global giant Whirlpool Corporation. In one of the few such cases in the U.S., Pinckney was sentenced to prison after being convicted last year of 5 felony counts of election law violation. He was found guilty of changing the dates on 5 petitions in a recall campaign against that city's mayor. Reverend Pinckney was convicted by an all-white jury, although Benton Harbor is more than 90% black, and despite the fact that the petitions in question dealt with a Benton Harbor city election, there was not one person from Benton Harbor on the jury. Pinckney's Tuesday appearance was on a motion for a new trial. That motion was denied, and he was taken in handcuffs back to prison, but not before the court first imposed a restitution fine to compensate the city's mayor for the duress he allegedly suffered as a consequence of the recall challenge. An appeal of the conviction is in process. Larry Pinckney, no relation, is the national spokesperson for Reverend Edward Pinckney and chair of the Central Coordinating Committee to Free Reverend Edward Pinckney. We spoke with him by telephone from Benton Harbor, Michigan, Wednesday.
This same judge at the hearing yesterday, April 14th, had the unmitigated audacity to fine, that's F-I-N-E, Reverend Pinckney over $1,700 so-called restitution. Now check this out. The court decided in its omnipotence, the judge, that, well, Reverend Pinckney somehow had caused duress upon the mayor for daring to utilize his constitutional right to organize a recall of this mayor, this Whirlpool puppet, James Hightower, and therefore ordered that Reverend Pinckney pay restitution of over $1,700, which of course, I mean, this is beyond absurd. As Mrs. Pinckney, Reverend Pinckney's wife, said, this wasn't a kangaroo court. It was beyond a kangaroo court. Mm. The hearing yesterday was nothing more than, it was one of the sickest spectacles I have ever heard of in thus far in this century in this country. So that's what happened yesterday. We're going to keep on fighting. It now moves on. When I say it, I mean the case now moves to the appellate stage. Because bear in mind that the hearing on the 14th, that was yesterday, Tuesday the 14th of April, was really an extension, should have been dealt with many months ago. In fact, it should have been dealt with before Reverend Pinckney was ever imprisoned, which he should never have been imprisoned anyway, when he was, in fact, imprisoned on the 15th of December 2014. So I'm saying this so that people, it's clear in people's minds that now that this was dealt with most unjustly, but dealt with nevertheless, by the court yesterday. The trial is officially over, so it now moves on to the appellate level, right. And that's where we're going to be directing our attention. But we, as political organizers, of course, are going to be emphasizing the injustice of the entire system. Bear in mind that this is Michigan. This is a state where you have so-called emergency managers. Benton Harbor was one of the first to be hit with that. An emergency manager is nothing more than a dictator. In other words, your elected officials essentially have no power anyway. The emergency manager comes in and says this or that will be done. And, of course, this is precisely playing into the hands in and for and of the corporations. In this case, it's Whirlpool Corporation, which is headquartered, by the way, in none other than Benton Harbor, Michigan. So that's essentially what happened yesterday, and I'll leave it at that, and let's, you know, you have more questions.
Okay, so just to clarify, I guess in Michigan, after the trial, after there was a verdict and sentencing, you're allowed, and particularly when you have discovery of new evidence that would bear on the fairness of the trial, you're allowed to make a motion for a retrial based on the new evidence and or a trial de novo, just, you know, this trial didn't come out right. And so when that process is completed, which is what happened yesterday, then it becomes ripe for appeal. Is that right?
That is correct. That is correct.
Okay. So meanwhile, he was put in prison he was convicted of, whether they proved it or not is another matter, but ostensibly he's put in prison for 5 sheets of a petition for a recall election against this mayor. Is that
right? That's
that correct?
Is correct. So that is correct. The same mayor, James Hightower.
So have you ever heard of a case in Michigan before where anyone did any jail time over petition irregularities, first of all?
No, I have not particularly, and that's a very good point that you're raising, that you're making, Don. The reality is that, first and foremost, Reverend Pinckney did not change anything, period.
Right.
But let's assume, for the sake of argument, or for the sake of discussion, let's assume that he did. Even if he had, which he didn't, but even if he had, that would be a misdemeanor. Reverend Pinckney was charged with felonies.
5 felonies.
Yes, 5 felonies. And this is beyond belief. This is why I call Benton Harbor, it's not only a Whirlpool company town, I call it Benton Harbor, Mississippi. Mm. And I make that point. You remember Nina Simone's song, Mississippi Goddamn.
Yeah, right, Michigan.
And, you know, that's where I'm coming from. Benton Harbor.
So for context, in Michigan, there are a number of cities and municipalities generally that have been taken over by the emergency process. There's an administrator who's appointed by the governor, is that correct?
That is correct, by the governor.
Okay, and also, if I'm not mistaken, each and every one of those cities is a majority black city and would normally be a Democratic city. Is that right?
Each and every one.
So what you have is a Republican governor who can negate local government, disenfranchise black voters by appointing a substitute for their elected officials who holds all the power. And that figure, the puppet of that figure, is who Reverend Pinckney was trying to have a vote on, did a recall petition. The recall petition was challenged. There was an allegation of fraud that he allegedly changed dates. He was convicted of changing the dates and sentenced to 10 years of prison. Is that what happened?
Yes, from 2.5 to 10 years in prison. And let me quickly, but most importantly, add, with no evidence. There was no evidence. The court admitted that there was no evidence. But they said, well, it's enough simply that, you know, we believe that Reverend Pinckney made some date changes, which is absurd. It's ludicrous beyond belief.
Because you're supposed to have beyond reasonable doubt, not belief, as a standard.
What a
conviction.
Joke. Beyond reasonable doubt. What a joke. So it's two things that are important. One is that, first of all, it should never have been on a felony level. Right. Never. He should never have been charged.
Right.
But since he was, it should never have been on a felony level. It should have been simple misdemeanors. Two, how do you convict someone with no evidence by the way, an all-white jury? The jury did not come from the township of Benton Harbor, where Reverend Edward Pinckney was doing the political organizing and the recall against the Benton Harbor mayor, who's a puppet. And Benton Harbor is over 90% black or African American. Okay? The jury pool was selected where? From the majority white city of St. Joseph, which is also a part of Berrien County. That's Mississippi politics at its height.
All right, so now they probably filed the notice of appeal yesterday or today, and they'll have a period to brief the appeal. Is that how it works in Michigan?
Well, at this stage, yes. I'm not sure whether I'm fairly sure that the appeal, the notice has already been put in. Let us hope. I'm not at all confident as I pointed out earlier, in the so-called defense lawyer who is from that same area. But I can tell you definitely that Reverend Pinckney has sought, and it has been approved, that he is to have a defense lawyer. We don't know who that lawyer, when I say defense lawyer now, I shouldn't say defense, I should say appellate lawyer.
Right.
All right. Through the state public defender's office. So that's at this stage where it stands. The transcript, of course, has not been transcribed because obviously this hearing yesterday was a part of the trial.
Right.
But the deadline for that, when I say the deadline when that should be in the hands of the defender's office, the public defender's office, who will handle the appeal, whoever that person will actually be. But the deadline is May 1st. So we shall see what kind of games they're going to play on that.
And meanwhile, he's in prison since December 15th.
Well, this whole time from December 15th onward, he has been in prison. Remember, he should never have even... How do you put someone in prison when the trial isn't over?
I've seen nominating petitions up the wazoo, and I've seen people pull every kind of game possible with them and seen it proven in court, and I've never seen anyone criminally charged, even with one exception, and with really gross, obviously gross fraud that involved conspiracy and everything else, and those people pled out misdemeanors.
Right.
I've never seen
that before. Misdemeanors.
I've never seen this before.
It should be kept in mind that this mayor, this James Hightower, he's going around boasting, ha-ha, this is what happens to people who challenge me. Well, of course, that's, by the way, on the record, he's been quoted as saying that. He said the last person who challenged me got from 2.5 to 10 years, and obviously he was talking about Reverend Pinckney. And, of course, the mayor wasn't even at the hearing yesterday, okay? The so-called defense lawyer didn't put the PI on, the private investigator, nor did he subpoena the mayor. And they say, since the court said this mayor, who's biologically black, he's a lackey, he's a Sambo, not a Tom, a Sambo, for the corporations, in this case Whirlpool, this mayor who claimed that he was under such duress, guess what? He's running again for re-election. Mind you, I can say on the positive side that the courtrooms were packed. It was overflow. Both courtrooms were packed because they had to have an overflow courtroom. There were people from as far away as Boston, Philadelphia, Detroit, Flint, from all over the place who were there in support of Reverend Edward Pinckney. But this is Benton Harbor, Mississippi, so they really don't care. But the people care. By the way, Jill Stein was there, the Green Party presidential candidate, as was her running mate, Sherry Hunkla, but for what it's worth. But this is not about party politics. This is about the people's struggle against corporate austerity, against the total control, total control by the corporations of the judicial process, which means, to be blunt, to quote the words of the late dictator, Benito Mussolini, the late fascist dictator, when you have corporations and the government working hand in hand, what you have is fascism.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.